This week, we will be studying the reign of King Joash of Judah, using 2 Kings 12 and 2 Chronicles 24 as our source text. Both passages tell generally the same story, but in slightly different ways and with different details. I am going to recommend that you read 2 Chronicles 24. If you want the full story, you can read both passages, but there will be considerable overlap there. The passages tell us about the 40-year reign of the boy King Joash, who, for most of his reign, followed the guidance of Jehoiada, the high priest who had raised him. Most of what is written about Joash's reign focuses on the temple renovations that were performed under his direction, but we also read of Joash's apostasy after Jehoiada's death, and of his conflict with Hazael, king of Aram. Joash's reign gives us an opportunity to contemplate the funding and organization of building projects, but perhaps more importantly, Joash here demonstrates the need for a new generation to display character, even when their elders are gone. Your passage for consideration is 2 Chronicles 24, and if you have not read it yet, I recommend that you pause and do so now. As we have discussed, Joash became king at 7 years old. He reigned 40 years, which is a good long reign, but since he started young, he died young, only 47 years old. By our timeline, his reign was from the 99th to the 139th years after the split with the northern kingdom. We will consistently call the king of Judah Joash and the king of Israel Jehoash. Both passages list Joash's mother as Zebiah of Beersheba, mentioned nowhere else. From the outset, we find that Jehoiada, the high priest who had raised Joash from a baby and installed him as king, had a major influence over the kingdom. That is to be expected. A 7-year-old would not know how to reign on his own and would be, at least for a time, little more than a puppet to someone else's string. One of Jehoiada's influences was providing for Joash 2 wives who bore him children. Obviously, polygyny was common at the time. Jehoiada also loomed large over the moral character of Jehoash's reign. Both passages tell us that Jehoiada did what was right, but only for as long as Jehoiada was alive. However, while they did right, they were not necessarily thorough about it. 2 Kings 12:3 tells us that the high places, unauthorized places of religious worship, which often engaged in idolatrous or otherwise immoral practices, were not eliminated. These high places had been a multi-generational problem. Solomon, the builder of the temple himself, had made use of them, and apparently no one to this point had ever really cleared them out. It is little surprise, following some 16 years of the crown sponsoring Baal worship in the reigns of Jehoram, Ahaziah, and Athaliah, that idolatry in the hills would be entrenched and difficult to root out. This is especially true since the temple of Jehovah itself was in a state of disrepair. By the time Joash took the throne, the temple had been standing for 148 years. It is unclear exactly what issues the temple had, but 148 years is plenty of time for some problems to crop up. The roof starts leaking, some cedar timbers start rotting. Next thing you know, something collapses, stones are knocked out of place, etc. The gold leaf coating everything inside may not rust or rot or tarnish, but it does wear out with use. And that, of course, generously presumes that no one did any intentional damage to the building. For 16 years, the worship of Jehovah had been out of favor. There's no telling what had been looted or vandalized in that time. In fact, we read in 2 Chronicles 24:7 that Athaliah's sons, likely intending her followers, had broken into the temple, stolen its treasures, and dedicated them to the house of Baal. It is no surprise that the boy king, under the influence of the high priest, wanted repairs done to the building. So, Joash called together the priests and Levites. He directed them to collect silver and to make the necessary repairs. The funds were to be drawn from the temple tax, that which was paid with a census, as in Exodus 30, 11 through 16, from the assessment of vows, as in Leviticus 27, and from voluntary offerings, as in Exodus 25, 1 through 9. Joash, we read in 2 Chronicles 24:5, explicitly told the priests and Levites to do this work quickly. He did not get what he asked for. They didn't just fail to do this, they failed in grand fashion. So much so that by the 23rd year, this work was still not finished. The formerly boy king turned 30 looking at an unfinished temple. Recall, per 1 Kings 6:38, that it had only taken 7 years to build the temple under Solomon. Now, perhaps I'm a little unreasonable here. The passage doesn't explicitly say that Joash ordered the repairs as soon as he took the throne, and Judah's wealth and power and economy had dwindled considerably since the time of Solomon. Judah scarcely had control over their borders at this point. Regardless, Joash called the priests and Levites in to ask why the bureaucracy was still dithering on this. The problem, apparently, was that they were collecting the money and then spending it on themselves. It would be nice if we could say that that kind of corruption is surprising, but unfortunately it is not. For this reason, Joash ordered them to stop collecting funds individually and centralized the temple collection. Jehoiada set up a collection box. It was a chest at the temple with a hole bored in the top. Money could be dropped in, but could not be taken out by just anyone. They announced to the people to bring the collection there, and the people gave cheerfully. When they entered the temple, the gatekeepers would receive the money from the people and would drop it into the box. When the box got full, two people would empty it. Those two people were the high priest, or his appointee, and one of the king's scribes, that is, an accountant. They would count and bag the money together, and that way there was no funny business. The donations went to workers, carpenters, masons, metalworkers, stonecutters, etc., and to buying them materials like timber, stone, and so forth. Interestingly, 2 Kings 12:15 mentions that the workers were not required to give an account for how they spent the funds. These evidently were independent contractors. They would bid on the job, and then how they handled the money from there was their business. I think the passage explicitly mentions this, though, to point out to us that the workers were to be trusted even over the priests and Levites, who were the bureaucrats of their day. 2 Kings 12:13 tells us that the silver and gold donated were not used to make basins, trimmers, bowls, trumpets, and other articles for the temple. This apparently intends that no such things were made before the workers were paid, as the surrounding context suggests. 2 Chronicles 24:14 clarifies that such articles were made after the work of the building had been completed. So finally, all of the renovations were completed and the new articles were put to use making the regular sacrifices. In this way, Joash got off to a good start. But that changed when Jehoiada died. Remarkably, the passage says at 2 Chronicles 24:15 that he died at 130 years old. That is excessively old, older than anyone in modern history. Before Noah's flood, the Bible records many ages from 300 to nearly 1,000, but this is one of the oldest after the flood. Others in the Bible over 100 years include Abraham at 175, Jacob at 147, Joseph at 110, Moses at 120, and Joshua at 110. You'll notice those numbers start out very high close to the beginning and tend to trend downward. Jehoiada's 130 is pretty amazing to think because it means that he was born all the way back in the reign of Rehoboam, the king under whom the kingdom split. We've had at least 15 sermons since then covering the reigns of 18 kings of Israel and Judah. It also means that Jehoiada was at least 83 when Jehoshaphat rescued Joash and 90 when he set him on the throne. Notably, I wanted to get an idea of how long Jehoiada had been high priest, and so I tried to compare against the list of priests in 1 Chronicles 6, but alas, Jehoiada is not mentioned there. The list is incomplete, or perhaps gives him an alternate name. They buried Jehoiada with the kings. That was a great honor for his good work, but more than that, it tells you something. Joash was king, but he was somewhat king in name only. The people knew where the real power was, and the power was with Jehoiada. But with him dead, Joash would have to chart his own path. He didn't do a good job of it. The leaders of Judah came to him asking to serve idols, and Joash gave in to them. I suppose he had not enough power to resist them and not enough courage to use what power he had. And so the people went back to idolatry. God sent both punishments and prophets against the people, but they would not repent. Into that mess came Zechariah, Jehoiada's son, described in 2 Chronicles 24, 20-22. He has only a few verses to his name, but let us give them their due consideration. This man was a prophet. The Holy Spirit came on him, and he delivered God's message. The message is short and bitter, that they had forsaken Jehovah, and so Jehovah had forsaken them. By transgressing Jehovah's commands, they could not prosper. This is a message that our generation desperately needs to hear today. God has given us moral laws by which we are obligated to live and to govern society. If we forsake those laws, as collectively our generation clearly has, then we should not at all expect to have God's favor, and we should not expect to prosper. Much to the contrary, we should expect God to turn his face against us and bring on us wrath. I beg you not to ignore this. Please, obey God's laws and live. But as is too often the case, the people would not listen, as in our generation they are not listening, as you yourselves can see, since I write you from a jail cell where I sit accused of religious and political speech crimes. Unfortunately, such is often the nature of Old Testament prophets. The people generally don't need a prophet when they are behaving themselves. The prophets tended to appear when the people were doing wrong and needed someone to set them straight, and usually the people don't set themselves straight. We studied the Proverbs together, and when we did, we found many which carried the general idea that a wise person loves rebuke and a fool hates it. See our message on The Wisdom of Humility, published June 4th, 2023. So we have a sad irony. The fools are the ones who need instruction, but then those who care enough about them to give it to them become targets of their foolishness. and yet the truth must be delivered. We must hope for the fool to change his ways, and even if we know that he will not, we must ensure that he cannot plead ignorance on the day of judgment. And so, tragically, these wicked and foolish men murdered Zechariah on Joash's orders. This is particularly tragic because this was Jehoiada's son. You will recall, see last week's message, that Jehoiada and his family, at risk to their own lives, had courageously rescued Joash and raised him as their own, even putting him on the throne. That Joash should repay that favor by killing Jehoiada's son is particularly tragic. As for Zechariah, as he was dying, he called for God's vengeance, calling out, "Jehovah, look on it and repay." And indeed he would repay. The spring of that very year, Hazael came up against them. You will remember Hazael is the king of Aram, anointed by Elisha the prophet to do much violence in wiping out the wicked among the two kingdoms of Israel. During Joash's reign, Hazael went out and conquered Gath. Gath was one of the capital cities of the Philistines and was on the opposite side of Judah from Aram. So for the Arameans to conquer Gath meant that they had essentially free rein to run over Judah's territory unanswered. Apparently the borders meant little or nothing to Hazael, and only the walled cities were safe. But not even those were safe for long, as Hazael set his sights on Jerusalem. Hazael brought only a small army, but Jehovah was on his side to execute judgment against Joash. And so Hazael defeated Judah's much larger forces. Joash himself was severely wounded and surrendered to Hazael, paying him a hefty tribute to go away. Hazael took all of the king's gold and all of the gold in the temple treasury, as well as all of the other sacred treasures of the kingdom which had been dedicated since the time of Jehoshaphat. Then Hazael left. While Joash was injured and weak, his own servants conspired together and killed him in revenge for the murder of Zechariah. The servants who killed him were descendants of Moabites and Ammonites. Both passages name Jehozabad, son of Shomer, or Shimrith, alternate spelling, the Moabitess, but they differ on the other name listed. This was either Zabad, the son of Shimeath, the Ammonitess, or Josachar, son of the same. Perhaps Zabad and Josachar were brothers. Or maybe these are just alternate names for the same person. Whatever the specifics, they assassinated the king while he laid in his own bed. Joash was buried as his fathers had been in the city of David, that is Jerusalem, but he, unlike Jehoiada, was not given the honor of a royal burial in the tombs of the kings. His works and so forth were recorded in the various historical books which became source material for today's text. Let us consider briefly in application the mess that the bureaucracy made of the temple renovations. The problem that caused these renovations to drag on without any progress was a lack of accountability. People, even the priests and Levites, are people, and people have sinful inclinations. When people are left to themselves without oversight and accountability, you can bet that they will commit sin. So when the Levites were collecting money by themselves locally, there was no oversight, and that money was being wasted and used up, never to arrive at its intended destination. I am sure we could draw a parallel to many modern government programs which lack adequate oversight, where funds go missing, where people get kickbacks, where projects are finished far later than expected and at much higher cost. The solution to this problem for Judah's temple renovations was to institute actual oversight and accountability. The donations were kept locked up, such that no one could get at them without two people looking at them and giving a full accounting. If anything went missing, the record would show it, and there would be witnesses to report on where things went wrong. If someone ran off with the money, that someone would face consequences. Having that kind of genuine oversight fixed the problems. We note also that these kinds of waste and abuse were not present among the contractors who performed the work. There is natural oversight there. If they want the job, they have to get it done to the satisfaction of the customer. That means they have to do it quickly. And if they want a profit, they have to do it while minimizing expenses. Free markets demand the best results at the lowest cost. The contractors did a better job of managing things than the bureaucrats did. That's what happens when you have private funds versus public funds. With that out of the way, we turn our attention to Joash and his fall from faith, though in reality, I fear he never had any. Joash was not a leader. He was a follower. When Jehoiada led him, he went the right way, but with Jehoiada gone, he went after the crowd. It had been by great courage that Jehoiada and Jehosheba put Joash on the throne, but Joash did not have that kind of courage. He was not willing to stand up against the crowd and do the right thing. This demonstrates in him a lack of true belief. If Joash had trusted in God, he would have expected God to provide for him and protect him, even in death. But he didn't have that kind of faith. He feared these men who would withdraw their support from his kingdom, or perhaps take his life, more than he feared God. Ironically, this cost him his life and his kingdom in the end. Joash's cowardice is to be contrasted against Zechariah's courage. Zechariah boldly stood in the face of the crowd and proclaimed God's truth, and he did not relent even though it cost him his life. That is true courage, and Zechariah is honored by God for it. I want to remind you of something. There are no grandchildren in the kingdom of heaven. Either you are a child of God with a saving faith in God, or you are not. The fact that your parents are faithful and that they teach you the faith will not save your soul. Joash did not have the faith that he was taught, and he did not keep it. He is the terror of Christian parents everywhere, that after they strove and sacrificed for their children to keep the faith, those children would fall away. And so I ask you, are you like Joash or Zechariah? When your parents aren't looking over your shoulder, will you be the kind of person who proves himself faithful in everything, or the kind who turns from righteousness and follows after a bad crowd? Only you can take responsibility for your own faith and works, and I pray that you will make the right decision. To conclude, 2 Kings 12 and 2 Chronicles 24 tell the story of the reign of Joash. After Jehoiada the high priest set Joash on the throne, Joash was faithful as long as Jehoiada was alive. During that time, he oversaw renovations to Jehovah's temple. The renovations were slow and costly at first because of a failure of accountability, but with proper oversight, the work was eventually accomplished. Sadly, it went to waste. When Jehoiada died, Joash turned from Jehovah and killed Jehoiada's son, Zechariah, a prophet. Where Zechariah showed true courage and the conviction of his faith, Joash cowered and followed the crowd. As a penalty, Jehovah sent Hazael to make a ruin of Joash's kingdom, and Joash's own servants killed him. And so I ask you what kind of man you will be. Will you be like Joash and the thieving bureaucrats who always needed someone to look over their shoulders? Or will you be like Zechariah and the contractors, men who could be relied upon to do right? I pray that you would be the latter. For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.